Support for WPR comes from UW-Superior Center for Continuing Education, offering Conversations on Living Alone, a three-part series beginning Wednesday, April 17th via Zoom. Details at uwsuper.edu.
Support for WPR comes from Stone Harbor, a Door County resort and conference center overlooking the historic Steel Bridge in Sturgeon Bay. Details about hosting a wedding or conference are at stoneharbor-resort.com.
A new resource center at the University of Wisconsin-Marathon County will showcase former Congressman Dave Obey's work in the House while encouraging young people to get involved in civics. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, September 2nd. Coming up, we will talk with the head of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service about the new OB Center and why he says it's important for students to engage in their communities. And then, after 7:30, we will welcome in former Congressman Dave Obey, and we will talk to him about inspiring young people to get involved in civics and in political life. And we'll talk with Congressman Obey about how we do that, and we'll talk with him about some current political issues as well. We will welcome your thoughts and questions for our first guest, though, on getting young people involved in civic life. How involved are you in civics in your community? Why do you take part? Do you aspire to get more involved? And what do you think we should do to get more young people involved in civics? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Eric Giordano, an associate professor of political science at UW-Marathon County and the director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, which aims to get citizens, especially younger people, actively involved in civic life. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us how this Dave Obey Civic Resource Center is going to play into your mission.
Right. Well, the Obey Center, obviously named after former Congressman Obey from the 7th Congressional District, really is about reaching out to young people and, you know, located here at a two-year campus. I think it's particularly important. And I think it goes back a little bit even to Congressman Obey's early career. He started out here at UW-Marathon County and said that he really gained his political footing and his desire to enter public service as a result of interacting with young people his own age and professors who were actively encouraging discussion in and outside of the classroom on civic matters and on public issues that really got him thinking and motivated to want to learn more. Mm-hmm. And I think really that's the purpose of the center. And I think in his retirement, Congressman Obey is very interested in having young people get engaged and realize that there are avenues to enter into public service and public life generally.
Yeah. Well, we know the big grand opening is tomorrow afternoon. What's going to be going on?
Well, we're going to have some public tours of the Obey Center starting at 4 p.m., public reception at 4:30, and then we'll go to a ribbon-cutting ceremony followed by some speakers, including Congressman Tom Petri. We'll have a student speaker. We'll have Congressman Sean Duffy. Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz is making the trip out from Florida. Senator Tammy Baldwin. And then Congressman Obey himself. And we're going to have a couple of special video messages. I won't reveal who they are right now from, but if you're interested in coming, come check it out. It'll be kind of a surprise.
Interesting. Well, I did see that you were asked to RSVP. Is it too late to go if you didn't RSVP?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, we're figuring most people don't RSVPs to public events. so anyone is welcome to come.
Well, that's an interesting mix there. This is not a Democratic affair, even though Congressman Obey served as a Democrat.
Right. This has been something that we've been emphasizing all along, both at the Wisconsin Institute, but also with the OB Center that, you know, in this day and age, we can't afford to choose sides. We really need to reach out to all young people and understand that there is room for everybody at the table. And so the mission of the center is strictly nonpartisan, and we are very serious about that message, and we've reached out to both sides of the aisle. And as you said, you know, we have both Republicans and Democrats who will be here, because I think the message really does transcend the partisanship that we often see in society.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about that. How can it transcend partisanship, given that we have such a polarized society, it seems?
Well, I think it takes some courage, and I think it takes some choices, some conscious choices by individuals, particularly those in elected office. And I think we're starting to see the pendulum maybe just tip a little bit in towards the direction of realizing that we might have gotten a little extreme in our disregard for the other. And I think that at the center, what we're going to try to do, and what, you know, people seem to be rallying around, is the idea that, you know, we need young people. We need intelligent, bright, smart, motivated young people in public service, whether you like government or think government needs to be smaller. Either way, we want the best people serving our society. And the only way we can do that is to show young people by word, by example, that, you know, there is both room for them and that, you know, this is a career and an opportunity for them to make a difference.
So are young people interested in civic life right now? You know, in the millennials, are they getting involved?
Yes, they are. They are getting involved. I think that this is one of the things that some people don't realize. However, I think that their involvement tends to be more in community service and is sort of has moved away a little bit from sort of traditional civic involvement, the way we think about it in terms of volunteerism for a party or volunteering for campaigns. But the millennials are a very service-minded generation and are active in community service in many ways. I think they are, like most of America, rather down on formal political processes, and especially on what they see and perceive as dysfunction at the national level.
Yeah, do we have to fix politics in order to get them to get involved in politics?
Well, that's a great question, Joy. I think that maybe what we need to do is provide opportunities for young people to get involved and to make the change that they want to be and that they want to see, as the saying goes. And so I think that part of what we're trying to do here is to provide different ways of thinking about politics. For example, maybe there are opportunities that we have, especially at the local and maybe at the state levels, to get involved in ways that don't require the traditional negativity surrounding partisan division. Maybe there are opportunities we have to actually participate in local politics through local town councils. You know, we've got a few young people who have interned with us who ran for public office, including local school board and at the county board level. And so there are opportunities, and I think what we're trying to do is say to young people, there are these opportunities, and you know, let's find new avenues for talking about political issues that you can participate in and feel good about participating in.
We are talking about getting more people, especially young people, involved in civics, political life, community service, public service. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Are you involved in civics in your community? Are you a young person who wants to get involved, and do you want to be the change that you desire? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about getting young people involved in civic life, in civics, because the David R. Obie Civic Resource Center opens tomorrow at the University of Wisconsin Marathon County in Wausau. And the purpose of the center is to help encourage young people to get involved in civics. We are talking with Eric Giordano, who is an associate professor of political science at UW-Marathon County and the director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, where the OB Center will be housed, talking about how to get citizens actively involved in civic life. And welcoming your thoughts and questions. First for Professor Giordano, but coming up after 7:30, we will welcome in former Congressman Dave Obie himself to talk about his new center and what he hopes for it. And we'll also ask Congressman Obie about some current issues in politics today. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And before we go to the phones, Professor Giordano, what does the Obie Civic Resource Center offer to young people to get them involved? How is it going to help?
Right. Well, we've got a couple of programs already underway and some that are going to be launching very soon. So, for example, one of the things that that's going to be happening is Congressman Obie and Congressman Petri are going to be doing a speaking tour together to talk about this issue of getting young people engaged in civics and in political life. And so they will be going around the state, actually, primarily looking to speak with college classes, even high school classes, and public groups generally. They've already done this a couple times over the last 2 years, and it was a great success in the two areas where it was held. And so we'll be offering that speaking tour, I guess you could say. And both of them feel very strongly in the mission of activating young people. And we're looking to partner with other organizations in this and getting other speakers involved. And so that's kind of a work in progress. We also have a leadership program that's being offered through the Obie Center, and that will be going forward this year with a number of students. And we're sort of doing it in combination with high schools in central Wisconsin so that there's a mentorship aspect with college students and high school students. You know, it's interesting, Joy, because just looking at this generally across the country, what we're finding, research is showing that many people aren't comfortable about having civics and more importantly, the issues, tough issues talked about in classes and in education anymore. And one study showed that only a quarter of teachers thought that thought that parents would object if their students talked about tough issues in the classroom, even in civics classes. And so I think we need to get around and away from the idea that we can't talk about public issues in educational settings, because we find that when students do talk about those issues and when they are engaged in these sometimes current events, topics, they tend to be more interested in them and tend to be more likely to get involved later in life.
Yeah. But the teachers, even university professors, run into some flack for the some say, you know, if the political persuasion of a professor is different than a student or a parent, then you start getting this talk about indoctrination.
Sure, sure. And teachers have a responsibility. I mean, teachers can't simply spread a certain doctrine because it's their own political preference. I mean, they have to really be open and willing to accept viewpoints from all sides and make students feel safe in addressing issues from both sides. In fact, I think good teaching would almost require that there be multiple viewpoints expressed about various issues. I think every parent, every teacher, every student realizes that is the best way to help students really learn. And I think that if we were practicing that at both the high school and college level, maybe there'd be less concern about indoctrination that sometimes we feel exists.
Well, we have lots of calls, so I better get to them. Ray in Superior is with us. Hi, Ray.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm about 28 years old. I ran for civic duty as a city council member. And on the county, I tried both. And all I ever found was, as you start out, it's sort of an old boys club. And as you get going, the administrators along the way, or the city council, or the zoning, they're always listening to you, but they're always overriding what you say. And it seems like there's just a group or not even like four or five people that make the major decisions on top, and everything's piecemeal on the bottom.
So what would you do about that, Ray?
Well, can you do anything about it? It's always older people in there, especially in rural settings. They think they know everything. They think they know everything about the county. And you're just, taking bids, gravel bids, seal coat bids, this and that, any other bid that you can think of. It always goes to committee, but it always goes to someone else, get strong arm it. Almost like they're Freemasons or something.
Right. Well, Ray's kind of discouraged. He's running into some brick walls there. Eric, what about that?
Well, certainly that exists, and I think he's right that, you know, in areas where you have longstanding individuals or even sometimes families who've been in positions of power, it is tough to break through, and I think that's a challenge. I think, though, that I think what's happening across the country is there's sort of a wave where people are recognizing at the county, local, municipal, government levels that public engagement is really critical, and that if we're going to accomplish what we need to under really difficult resource constraints, we're going to need everybody. We can't afford anymore to leave Ray and other people out of the process, especially if they're interested in involvement. And so I think it's unfortunate that he's run into that, but I would say don't give up. And there are many organizations around the state that are working, including the Counties Association and Association of Municipalities and Towns that are, I think, trying to help promote the idea of greater public participation of all ages and groups.
Yeah, and certainly those old-timers can't be serving forever and ever. Eventually, the younger people need to take those spots.
Right, and I would urge them to groom and help these younger people to want to get involved, because you're right, what's going to happen when they leave?
Yeah. Well, and talk a little bit more about why this is so important to get young people involved in civic life.
Well, you know, students who recall better civic education, who actually can remember getting civic education and seeing or remembering it as making a difference even at the young level, are very much more likely to get engaged. And interestingly, discussing controversial current issues is one of those things that seems to boost knowledge and interest. The other thing that's extremely helpful is for young people not only to talk about these issues as they're learning and maturing, but also to be involved. And so service learning or working actually through internships and through service projects is extremely helpful, especially if those issues and service projects are addressing real social issues. And so students who participate in these types of activities, it turns out, are much more likely to participate in political processes and be engaged in civic life and in their communities as they get older.
Well, speaking of which, Eric in Delafield. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Joyce. Thanks for taking my call. I'll make this brief. I just wanted to say that I completely agree with your guest. I work at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, and I'm a counselor in the college business. We require our business students to have minimum of 20 hours of community service just to graduate. And beyond that, I teach a service learning class to our business students. And I find that these business students who participate in this course, in the end, we do a pretty wonderful experience in the end, a service project, are just more empathetic and compassionate, and just it lends well to team building and leadership qualities that they could carry with them into the future. And so I'm fortunate in that I work at a university that really promotes that and that makes it a requirement of students, because I think it's really, really necessary in today's day and age.
Thank you. Thank you very much to Eric in Delafield. Eric Giordano, is that typical through the UW system as far as you know?
I think it certainly is something that has caught the attention of most academic institutions, public and private, across the country. And I think more and more are starting to realize the value of adding these types of service components to the classroom, so that the curricular and the co-curricular really merge and create a rich learning environment for students. And research does show that that tends to actually help students not only do better in college, but be better prepared for the job market. And there are many skills, you know, that are civic-related skills that can be developed not just in traditional politics or civics classes, but as your caller just mentioned, in any type of class, business, humanities, things like deliberation, collaboration, public speaking, all of these skills are really critical to being successful and engaging in public life.
Yeah, so, boy, we don't have time. We have another caller who just thought that young people don't get as involved in politics as maybe we'd like them to because they don't feel valued in the political process. So you want to comment on that in very briefly since we're almost out of time?
Sure. I mean, that is true. I mean, it is true that the majority do feel that way, but increasingly we're finding students are recognizing that what they have to offer is valuable. The harder part of challenge is to help them to find the pathways where they can express themselves and feel like they're making a difference.
Yeah. Well, in our final minute, what's your hope for the Dave Obie Civic Resource Center?
Well, we're just very excited to have a lot of wonderful people involved, both in the formal political sphere, but also many students and community members who invested in this. And we're just excited to move forward and really interested in partnering with other organizations out there. And so we're excited for opportunities. So come visit us, and we sure look forward to seeing you and serving you.
Thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Eric Giordano, an associate professor of political science at UW-Marathon County, the director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, which aims to get citizens, especially younger people, involved in civic life. The grand opening of the Dave Obie Civic Resource Center is tomorrow in the UW Center for Civic Engagement on the UW-Marathon County campus. You can get more information on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. The David Obie Civic Resource Center opens tomorrow at the University of Wisconsin Marathon County in Wausau. Big to-dos planned, and we'll talk some about what's going to happen tomorrow, and we'll talk about the mission of the Dave Obie Civic Resource Center, which is to get young people involved in civics, to engage young people in public life. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:37 on this Tuesday, September 2nd. We are very happy to have with us Congressman Dave Obie. We'll talk about the center and getting young people involved in politics, and we'll talk a little bit about some current issues in politics, political issues in the news. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Dave Obie is a former Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. He served 21 terms before retiring in 2011 as chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. Good morning, Congressman Obie.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks very much for being with us. So how excited are you about the grand opening tomorrow of the Dave Obie Civic Resource Center?
Well, I'm more excited about what should happen after that's over. I think it's awfully important that institutions of higher learning actually engage in the great struggles of their times. That's certainly what the University of Wisconsin has done throughout Wisconsin history, going back to Bob La Follette and other political leaders. And I think if this institution can persuade even one young person to get involved in politics, it will be worth it. I mean, what I first became intensely interested in the Middle East, for instance, because of a series of debates which faculty members had on campus at the UW Marathon County when I was a student there. And I never dreamed that listening to those six lectures over a six-week period and those six debates over a six-week period, I never dreamt that that would wind up with me chairing the Foreign Operations Subcommittee, which handled the budget for the Middle East foreign assistance. So you never know where opportunity is going to show itself.
Yeah, and why do you think it's so important for young people to get involved in civics or political life?
Because people who walk into a voting booth without having a clue about what the issues are or how they fit into the needs of their community, they're a public menace. It's important that people be informed not only about the issues in politics, but how politics really does work. What are the interrelationships between the federal government, the state government, and local governments? If people don't know the basics about how democracy works, they're not going to be adding very much in a constructive way to dealing with the problems that society faces.
Yeah, but they're going to be a menace.
Well, if you wade into politics without knowing what you're talking about, yeah, you're a menace.
talk some about what you hope to do as a part of this resource center to get kids more involved.
Well, that will be up to the people who are doing the teaching there. My role has simply been to provide the Institute and the State Historical Society with the papers from my office covering the 42 years that I served in the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hoping that those papers will be a good resource for people who are trying to understand how government makes decisions, what priorities are, and how politicians manage to cut through their differences in order to get things done.
Well, we heard from Professor Giordano that you will be on a speaking tour with one of your former colleagues, Congressman Tom Petri, who has just retired as well from his service. So, talk some about how bipartisanship in politics today.
Well, you're never going to take the politics out of politics.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that what politicians are supposed to do is, first of all, define their differences so that the public understands what the difference in approach would be if, say, Republicans are elected versus Democrats. But after you define those differences so that the public knows what their set of choices are, then politicians are supposed to be able to sit down and resolve those differences so that you can actually get things done. And I know that people say, I heard one of your callers talk about how difficult it is to get heard if you're new in politics. I understand that, but that doesn't mean that progress isn't made. If you take a look at the way this country has changed since I was an entering student at the UW, when I walked onto that campus in Marathon County, there was no Civil Rights Act, there was no Voting Rights Act, there was no Medicare. There was no Medicaid. There was no Clean Water Act or Clean Air Act. There were no Pell Grants. There was no federal aid to education. The budget for the National Institutes of Health, which lead the research effort in this country on medical diseases, the budget was tiny in comparison to what it is now. there was no Affordable Health Care Act. So, yeah, democracy is not easy. But if anybody can tell me that the struggle hasn't been worth it when you run through those lists of changes over the years,
yeah, it's amazing.
I'd say they're looking at a different country's history than I am.
Yes, that is amazing. What was the most rewarding thing to you, for you, about your 40 plus years in Congress?
Well, if you're a legislator in public life, you really have three jobs. One is to be a legislator and help decide the issues before you. The second is to be a service agent for your district to try to help communities and individuals as much as you can when they have to deal with government. And third is to be a public educator and try to explain to the public why the easy answer might not be the right one. I mean, that's a pretty interesting life if you get involved in it as I did. And I think young people just starting out today can have that same experience if they're interested enough and if they try hard enough. But the most important thing to me is simply to make life easier and more humane for the average working family in this state and in this country. And every time you can do that, you're striking a blow for the common good.
Any regrets about retiring?
Not really. I have a lot of regrets about what we were not able to do. I guess one of my, I'd say I have three main regrets. The first is that I was the first member of the Congress to, in a systematic way, try to bring people's attention to the issue of income disparity. And I regret very much that we haven't been able to make more progress on that front. Secondly, I regret very much what the Supreme Court has done to campaign finance. It's made it easier for money to play a dominant role in politics. And then thirdly, I regret the fact that we have somehow, in some quarters, accepted the idea that government is the enemy. When you look at the changes that government has brought about that I just recited, it's going to be awfully difficult to convince me or any objective person, I think, that all of those things were done by an entity that was an enemy of the American people. That's just nonsense.
We are talking with Dave Obey. He is a former Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. And we're talking with him on the eve of the grand opening of the Civic Resource Center, named after him. The Dave Obey Civic Resource Center will be opening up tomorrow, Wednesday, September 3rd, in the UW Center for Civic Engagement on the UW Marathon County campus in Wausau. The mission of the center is to allow young people access to all of Congressman Obey's papers from his 42 years in Congress, but also to encourage young people to get involved in politics and in civics. We'll talk with Congressman Obey more about his center, but also about some current issues in the news, and we'll welcome your questions as well. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, September 2nd. We are talking with Congressman Dave Obey, former Congressman Dave Obey, on the eve of the grand opening of the Obey Civic Resource Center on the UW Marathon campus in Wausau. The opening ceremony tomorrow will feature national political figures from both sides of the aisle. Congressman Obey will be there. His successor, Republican Congressman Sean Duffy, will be there, as will Republican Congressman Tom Petri, who represents Wisconsin's 6th congressional district right now, but is not seeking re-election. Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin and others. That's tomorrow, Wednesday, September 3rd, on the UW Marathon County campus. You can get more information on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you'd like to talk with Congressman Obey. Well, before we go to the phones, I did want to ask you a couple of things. Since you're going on this speaking tour with Tom Petri and you... I know that Tom Petri speaks very favorably about his time with you in Congress and will be there tomorrow at the ceremony. He is not going to be representing the 6th district after the November election. What do you think Petri's legacy will be?
Well, I think it'll be one of balance and decency. Tom is a very conservative, solid Republican. A straight Main Street Republican. And Gaylord Nelson, who was a great friend of mine, once told me that he thought Tom Petri was the most decent person who had ever run against him. And I think that pretty well sums things up.
Yeah. What do you make of him being primaried, though, before he decided to retire by the even more conservative State Senator Glenn Grothman?
Well, I mean, people are free to do anything that they want in politics. But if you take a look at Petri's legacy, I mean, there would not be an earned income tax credit on the books without Tom Petri's efforts. And he pushed that as long ago as the Reagan administration. He also has had some very innovative ideas with respect to student loans, and when Tom and I went to Congress in terms of federal highway money, Wisconsin was a donor state. We got back about 73 cents for highways that we sent to Washington through the gas tax, and Tom Petri, Jim Moody, and I, working together, were able to turn that around and make sure that Wisconsin was getting back a dollar for a dollar cent. So, I mean, he's had a great impact, and he's done it all in a style that is non-confrontational. He reminds me a lot of Warren Knowles, who was the Republican governor when I was in the legislature, and was also a principled conservative, but also knew how to work with people on both ends of the political spectrum.
Let's take some calls. We have a number of people who want to talk with you. Daniel in Rice Lake, we'll start with. Hello, Daniel.
Hello. The Middle East is on fire largely because of the failures of the Bush administration. There's a growing caliphate in ruled by ISIS. What would you advise President Obama do about ISIS?
It's hard for me to say because I've been away from it now for 4 years and I'm not privy to the information I used to be privy to. But I would simply say this. I think America wound up being trapped in a certain sense in the Middle East. We have these great debates about the Iraq war, and I certainly opposed us going to war in Iraq. There isn't so much of a debate about the previous effort when, under George Bush Sr., we moved militarily against Saddam Hussein and moved him out of Kuwait. And there isn't nearly the opposition to that action that there was to the action of George Bush's son in Iraq. And yet I voted against the first war as well, not because I thought it would be a bad idea to free Kuwait, but because I was concerned that if we went into that war, that we would stay too long. We would have too heavy a footprint in the Middle East, and that over time we would become the issue rather than the bad actors like Saddam Hussein. And I think that's exactly what happened. If we had learned how to deal with that issue with less cultural visibility, I think we would not have made ourselves as vulnerable to attack as we did. And once that mess has been created, it's very, very hard to overcome it. Mm-hmm. There is no question that on the merits, the organization that the caller just mentioned is a bad apple. And whatever we can do to weaken them, we ought to consider doing. But the problem is, do you have the tools to do what you want to do? Do you have the assets on the ground? And by that, I mean the local governments of the various countries who will actually effectively be standing with you in any action you take. And that, to me, has been the great missing ingredient. So I don't blame President Obama for being very cautious in moving into that arena, because we have precious little tools to do so, both because of the fecklessness of some of those governments and also because of our previous historical involvement in the area.
We go to Marcia in Kakana now. Hi, Marcia.
Good morning. I'm wondering how Mr. Obi feels about term limits, considering the fact that he's 40-plus years.
Oh, I think term limits are an absolutely wonderful idea if you're a lobbyist who wants to deal with a bunch of greenhorns in Congress who really don't know the score. I think term limits are a wonderful idea if you're a bureaucrat and you don't want elected officials interfering in any way in your bureaucratic decisions. I'd like to know what problem the term limits are supposed to be solving. The average member of the House right now doesn't serve much over 6 years, and I think any objective observer, when they take a look at the House these days, will say that one of the problems you have is that you have very little institutional memory left, because people who were around for other issues in the past are no longer around, and so you can't get some of the sage advice or caution that you used to be able to get. Mm-hmm. If you had a greater number of people who actually spent some time working there. I mean, the Republican Party in the House of Representatives has imposed term limits on their own chairman, yeah. Term limits of 6 years. And so what happens is that the first 2 years that you become chairman, you're learning the job. The second 2 years, you are trying to do the job after you've learned some of the fine points.
And then you're done.
And then the third 2 years, you're looking over your shoulder because there are two or three other people who want to be chairman.
Congressman Obi, I apologize for
maneuvering around and making.
I have to jump in. I have to jump in, Congressman Obi, because we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.